Hello, and welcome to episode 82.5 of the History of Yugoslav Football podcast, our Bosnian companion episode. So, as we mentioned in the past two proper episodes, this last little Bosnia arc was always going to come with a companion piece sort of to go through the issues in Bosnian football now. Because while the stated aim of the podcast and sort of coming to the end of it has always been, you know, let's make sure that things are left off at a point where things have kind of settled down. The point at which Bosnian football settled down, I think it's fair to say, is around about 2014, and is with that World Cup squad. Not because it's the, you know, sort of, as we said in episode 82, because it's the zenith of Bosnian football, far from it. But it's because it directly follows the introduction of the single FA president, the imposition of that by FIFA and UEFA, in terms of domestic league changes. You know, if you're talking about the move of it to the Liga 12, then you talk about the administrative changes to put in place Liga 12 being done around about the same time. You know, it was 2015, the start of the 15-16 season at which the Liga 12 thing was brought in. They call it properly the Premier League. It was originally the Liga 12. That name didn't really stick because lots of places have top flights with 12 teams in, so it wasn't very distinct. But since then, things have gone downhill, and I don't think anyone would disagree with me in that assessment. And certainly the past couple of years have seen it go downhill to the point of, you know, possibly Bosnia's lowest ebb, certainly as a national side, probably from an organisational perspective as well. And whether I want to say in domestic football or not, I think the positive aspect of domestic football has probably highlighted how everything else has gone down the toilet a bit. So, as such, we'll talk first about the issue that was brought in really by FIFA and UEFA in 2011-2012 around the single president. Because ultimately I think a lot of the issues can be brought to that. Elvedin Begic is competent, and certainly not going to have a pop at him, his reputation. You know, there's no doubt he did certainly the best he could under difficult circumstances, but you know, particularly when COVID hit. But then you have Vico Zeljkovic come in to follow him. Now, Vico, as we mentioned, is the nephew of Milorad Dodik, the head of the Republika Srpska. He's also previously been involved in the running of Bajč Banja Luka as well. And it's fair to say he's probably wasn't qualified really to take the role. I'm not suggesting that massive amount of people were more qualified than him for it, but I think it's fair to say, you know, when we're talking about good old Vico, that you know, while he has had his involvement with Borac, you know, from 2018 to 2020, and as president of the Republika Srpska FA from January 2020, so through COVID for a year, then took over as head of the Bosnian FA. It's not masses and masses of experience, is the point. The also sort of secondary issue is, as we mentioned in the last episode, that as a politician, Milorad Dodik's stated ambition is, of course, Republika Srpska not really being part of Bosnia itself. He is nationalist, he is potentially separatist, and one of the things that his politics has always been around doing has been about making sure that Republika Srpska is as autonomous as it can be, whilst also not really annoying everyone at the same time. He's not necessarily managed the latter, there's a lot of people who don't like him, but he probably has succeeded in the former. You know, much of the Republika Srpska is essentially self-governing. I don't think that's it isn't a controversial statement to say that. And a lot of his thing, a lot of his views are not okay in any way, shape, or form. He has been under, and is currently under investigation, and had even been on trial for defying the edicts of the High Representative, because him and Christian Schmidt do not get along one bit. I mean, in fact, you know, the part of that in particular focus at the moment is that the Constitutional Court of Bosnia-Herzegovina basically now isn't listened to by the Republika Srpska, and that was voted through in the Assembly of Republika Srpska earlier this year. Christian Schmidt, the current High Representative, annulled those laws, but you know, that's sort of part of the current beef, but there's a lot of beef between them, it's fair to say. I think that's one of the things to explain at the moment is, you know, Christian Schmidt, as High Representative himself, is the first one to come in who really, I think it's fair to say, hadn't had a lot of experience in the region prior to taking over the role. You know, obviously, we've mentioned Paddy Ashdown previously as one. You know, obviously, he was very involved in the region. You know, Schmidt, it's fair to say, wasn't. You know, we're talking about a guy who has primarily been just a middling German politician. You sort of look at his history, his only sort of bulk in history has been as part of a group of German-Croatian friendship and trade and stuff like that. And you know, directly prior to this was the federal minister of Germany for food and agriculture. The point is, he's not Mr. Got this massive amount of experience in Bosnia, in the Balkans in general, and as such probably hasn't been as delicate in many things as he should have been, primarily with the changes in Bosnia's electoral law literally during voting in the 2022 election. So there are obvious issues there. The reason why that's all very important is because Vico Zelkovic is his nephew, and Vico Zelkovic's interest, again, while there is no direct him coming out and saying this, I think it's fair to say a lot of people within Bosnia would say Vico Zelkovic is running the Bosnian FA for the benefit of Republika Srpska. When you see Savo Milosevic be appointed as manager, you naturally are like, huh, he's Serbian. And while that's not a criticism of Savo Milosevic in any way, shape or form, you know, as people with as Serbs with a political history go, he's certainly one of them with a less checkered past. It's still, you know, unsurprisingly and quite rightly, a interesting and controversial decision. You know, from my perspective as someone who follows football in the region, it's controversial because Savo Milosevic hasn't actually shown himself to be really that good as a manager. You obviously remember he got sacked from Partizan after throwing bottles at a referee. He got sacked as manager of Olympia for being not very good. So I would question what his qualifications were to become manager of Bosnia. You know, of course, he is ethnically Serb. He is Bosnian, to be fair to him, in respect that he is born in Bielina, raised in Jovac, and holds dual citizenship. But he's sort of from all over, it's fair to say. You know, on his dad's side, he's Montenegrin. He's even directly related to Slobodan Milosevic, rarely enough. Now, I'm not going to necessarily look directly criticise Savo Milosevic. He's a bit of a pawn in all this, really. But it's obvious that for the national side, there were faces that didn't fit. Faruk Hadžibegić obviously came in as predecessor, but one, of the national team, and was sacked fairly justifiably. I think it's fair to say he was quite an uninspiring appointment. He was followed by Miho Kodro. Kodro was sacked after 6 weeks, for no one really knows why. And then obviously Savo Milosevic came in. Ivalio Petev, who preceded Hadžibegić, actually had a very good record. And I think it was probably slightly harsh that he wasn't kept on. The team did improve under him, but, you know, for whatever reason, it didn't happen. His contract expired and he wasn't kept on. So I think you can possibly assume from there that there may be monetary issues at play. Certainly, if you're talking about from a historical, are they good, are they not, as a manager perspective, the stature of Hadžibegić, Kodro and Milosevic was below that of Petev. I think you possibly see the reasoning there. Now, obviously, one of the interesting things has been that it's coming through the two historical episodes we've just been, has actually come through a period of where we've had articles about Bosnian football. And one I'd like to start off with is the recent one from Josimar. So this came out on the 20th of November, entitled Pitch Black, The Murky Affairs of Bosnian Football. And while I fully recommend just go and have a read of it, it's josimarfootball.com. Josimar is in the old Brazilian player. To give you sort of the pressy, it is about the pitches scandal. Now, you may not have heard of the pitches scandal, but essentially UEFA gave the Bosnian FA money via Vukan Zukovic, and that was to improve standard of pitches, install hybrid pitches across the country, basically. The installation of pitches was beyond botched, I think it's fair to say. You know, everything ran late, very late. And, you know, some of them just, there were lots of accusations around it, I think it's fair to say. You know, if we talk about the work starting and meant to be completed over summer 22, and it, for most of them, you know, they weren't properly installed. They were delayed for their installation as well. And yeah, sides were having to play away from home and things like that last season. It was a mess. Now, the problem is with that particular installation, and we can sort of go into older news, because the Josimar article really is actually based on some Bosnian investigative reporting from over a year ago. The issue is around the tendering process for that. So Bosnia were given just over €1 million from one program and a COVID one, and they got sort of a COVID loan, which bumped it up to around about €1.5 million that they got from UEFA to install these pitches. Now, a large amount of the funding had to be paid for by the Bosnian FA itself, and then they put in a tendering process for it. The Josimar article would basically state that that process was not handled in the most transparent and honest of manners. For a start, the ask from the FA was not for the latest type of pitch, you know, spiffy grass and anything like that. It was for a slightly older construction method, which meant a lot of companies didn't bid because it just wasn't something they did anymore. You know, no one is going to come in and do an installation. It's kind of like sort of emailing your broadband provider and asking them, can you give us a dial-up modem? It's that sort of thing. It didn't happen because no one does it anymore. As such, it ended up with a different company called, if I remember the name rightly, Wicker. Now, they got the contract, and you know, obviously, as we're aware, it wasn't very good. But yes, the point of it is that Yosma's article posits accusations that the entire tendering process, the sort of technical side to put through that tendering process, also was designed for one specific bidder to be favoured. And as you can probably imagine from there, that not all of them were fully at arm's length of people. I think the issue quite clearly is sort of twofold from that. Not just that the actual pushing through of the bidding was entirely honest or whatnot. Aside from that, the other thing is that, you know, when UEFA give you a lot of money, they attach conditions to it. And if the putting through of this particular bidding process was done as Yosemite state it was, and to be fair, I'm just going to say it's not just Yosemar, N1, you know, there's multiple direct Bosnian media sources who would back that up also. If it was done the way it says it's done, was actually in contravention of UEFA's contract with the Bosnian FA, what would actually happen in that case, I don't know, and I don't suppose anyone really does, but the point is that if you were wanting to make accusations towards Vico Zeljkovic of him being a bit iffy, then you could, because there are clearly things that have gone on that are a bit iffy, and it shouldn't be the case that that happens. You know, if you follow BIH Football, which is the largest Bosnian football account on the old Twitter, their pinned tweet is of all the people who are screwing over Bosnian football at the moment. Now, the pitches thing is not necessarily directly relevant as to how Bosnian football is doing at the moment. You know, I think that the very best of it is, you know, it's a positive thing to have those pitches, because if you watch enough football in the region, you will know there are some extremely variable definitions of the term playable. I have certainly seen some over the past couple of weeks in, I think it was the Croatian fourth tier even, where there's just one side of the pitch is just a lake. It's fun. But it's indicative of the start of the problem. Because, you know, there are other things that go on. You know, for after the last international break, for instance, there was an allegation through the Ukrainian media. Now, Ukraine are facing Bosnia in the Euro 2024 playoff. A statement on Telegram that players are paying for call-ups. 20,000 euros a call-up to the national side. Hence, probably why you don't have many players playing in the domestic league that are in the national side, because they don't get paid that much in a few months. It's a very interesting accusation. I think it's also fair to note something that I read in the last during the last international break from the Serbian media, from Zunal. In that particular international break, Miran Pjanic claimed he was injured. Edin Dzeko claimed he was tired. Sead Kolasinac pulled out, I think, saying he was tired as well. And because the games were dead rubbers, they weren't picked, I don't think they thought it would be a problem. However, when you're seeing in the Serbian media them actually calling out and saying, Edin Dzeko, you so-and-so, you should not be playing for the Bosnia national side again. And when you're reading that article, and the name of the author escapes me, but he's actually someone who is connected to Vico Zeljkovic. So you can have an impression that the statement that the most prominent player your country has ever produced should never play for the national team again is coming from that source, then you can sort of come up with the feeling that that's kind of the prevailing way of thought within the FA itself. So that is some clear and obvious organisational issues with the FA in terms of sort of political briefing through the media, in terms of potentially the money stuff. That's just mad. But you know, it's certainly not limited in any way, shape or form to that. Now we can obviously talk about the results. 2023 has been dire, filled with losses. It has, I think, probably been the worst qualifying campaign in terms of on the field performance that Bosnia's ever put together. I can't remember off the top of my head if it's on points. I don't think it is the lowest points total they've had, but certainly, you know, the performance nadirs have been far greater than we've ever seen before. You know, I think the 4-1 loss against Luxembourg was pathetic. The 5-0 loss to Portugal in Bosnia, now bear in mind Portugal were 5-0 up at half time and then just switched off. You know, it was dire. Really dire. The actual standard of play was agricultural. I think there's one nice one from the stat from the Slovakia game where they were attempting a long ball every minute. So yeah, go Tony Pulis, Savo Milosevic. It is just bizarre. Now, fans aren't turning out for it. That isn't a surprise in any way, shape or form. I don't blame them. They shouldn't be turning out for what's been put forward to them. There's absolutely no doubt about that. I think really the best counterpoint to it is how Zrinski have done. You know, so we've seen Zrinski in the UEFA group stages. Of the Conference League, I've done, you know, really admirably. I think it's fair to say, beating AZ and getting a draw against Villa in both in Mostar, and you know, really nearly holding out for the full 90 odd minutes against Villa in Birmingham. You know, those are really good results, given the financial disparity. Now, the point is, with this, you know, Zrinjski are a club who have planned this. You know, this isn't a short-term thing for them. If you got to the December issue of World Soccer, you will have seen Alec Macquarie's article about specifically the Mostar derby, but you know, I think it's particularly from a Zrinjski outlet, really. Certainly interviewed myself and had a good chat about both sides and about Zrinjski, and a couple of quotes from Zrinjski administrators within there as well. Now, how this season is going is slightly different, and I will air my opinion on that very much as I aired it when I chatted to Alec for that particular article, which was this year Borac are winning the title. They are 10 points clear of Zrinjski, and I've watched games, and yeah, again, you sort of, you wonder about the legitimacy of some things that you see in the league. Certainly some of the decisions I've seen given in Borac's favour have been interesting. But and when you have a head of the FA who is completely, you know, his footballing past is Republika Srpska, is Borac, you look at it doubly suspiciously. I mean, I watch a lot of football with a modicum of suspicion anyway. You know, in any country, particularly in the Balkans. But, yeah. I think you know what I'm getting at. The reason why I want to use Zrinjski as a counterpoint is because they've planned. You know, we're talking about them getting into the Europa Conference League. Isn't a plan from, okay, we've won the league this season and we'll get knocked out and knocked out and fall in and sort of do it accidentally. It's not. It's for, you know, maybe 5 years of solid planning and building the team up bit by bit, coping with setbacks, making the right appointments, working smarter, as it were, to bring themselves up to a level where they could get into a group stage and not disgrace themselves. I think it's also a very important point to make. You know, we can talk, I'm sure, whenever I do, and I'll talk one about the Serbian League, you know, we'll always talk about Kukurici and, you know, how great their youth system has been, how great their development is. Yeah, they went into the Europa Conference League and ended it with 0 points. 6 games, 6 defeats. And what did Zrinjski do? You know, who you would say are a smaller club with far less in the way of talent, I'd also say. They got 4 points. And, you know, beat a very good Dutch side on their home turf, got a draw against a very good English side who are absolutely flying at the minute on the home turf. You know, that's a really, really impressive campaign for them. Now, the point is that when things in Bosnia are run well, and this is a rarity, I know, maybe listeners who are very much invested in Bosnian football who will be like, we don't really recognise clubs that are run well. Zrinjski have been over the past few years, but this is what they can achieve. You know, the changes to the European competitions have very much favoured teams that are winning titles, because you're able to do that sort of three-step knockout. You know, but you still have to win. You still have to win two ties in Europe to get through to a European group stage. That isn't an easy thing. Now, you look at the sides that Zrinjski came up against, you know, Urartu, the Armenian champions. Okay, they're not a great side by any shakes, but you know, you're talking about going to Armenia in July, which is traditionally extremely hot, extremely dusty, extremely different conditions to what you have in Bosnia, then get through a penalty shootout. They do themselves very creditably against Slovan Bratislava, who, you know, obviously have been very competent in the Conference League as well. Beat Breiðablik, again, they're in the Conference League, to get through to the Europa League playoff, and do really creditably against last Linz in the playoffs. So, you know, they didn't fluke their way into the competition, is the point. And, you know, they were probably unlucky to miss out in 22-23 on a group stage appearance. I think they certainly could have, or weren't far away from it. Now, this is the thing for any side from a smaller nation, is obviously that, you know, really that's probably your limit, unless you're able to get that sort of ball rolling, get two or three qualifications in a row, and be able to start investing with secure money. You know, in addition, Zrinski's rise can't also be looked at purely in isolation. You have to appreciate that for them to have done as well as they have done, you know, there have been issues at other clubs. You only have to look at issues at FK Sarajevo since they last won the league, in terms of, well, you know, their financing, how their fans have appreciated or not, as the case may be, the ownership, the investment, and how things have gone there. You know, I think it's really fair to say, you know, the last title was 2020. 2021, they were second, but well off. And then, you know, the two following seasons, they were miles and miles off. You know, for Zvezda, they have been quite a way off for a long time. You know, obviously, I won't necessarily go too much into the Mostar clubs because Velez's issues have been a bit different. We also saw, you know, changes in licensing that saw clubs relegated. If you go back to 21, Mladost Doboj Kikanya. Again, that was a bit weird how that all went. If you go back another year to Celik, that was, yeah, that was just a nonsense. The issues that happened with Celik Sinica in terms of, again, the administration and why they were excluded from the league as they were. It's problematic. And obviously I appreciate, you know, I myself as someone who is not based in Bosnia, and, you know, I can't say I do watch every game religiously, because the only people who do the highlights are Arena Sport. And Arena, if you've ever watched Arena Sport highlights, they're awful. The thing that Arena Sport highlights don't have, I don't think any other country in the world does this, they don't have, or at least don't put on the highlights packages, a hard camera. If you don't know what I mean by that, the hard camera is the one you have in the stand on the halfway line that just goes left, looks left and looks right, so you can see the sort of the full panorama of the action and see how players are moving and stuff. No, it's just a series of sort of sideline cameras, handhelds and close-ups stitched together. It's so annoying to watch. But they do get them up very quickly, so I'll give them that. The point of all that is, as I appreciate, I'm not, you know, by no way, shape or form, the person who is in the best position to sit and talk all about this. You know, I'm giving you as good a summation as I can of the issues. You know, there are plenty of domestic sources who, you know, you'd be very well advised to listen to. You know, if we talk purely about the league as it is today, you know, Zelyas and Karin nearly in the relegation zone. You know, they will probably go into the winter either just out, either one place outside it or one place inside it. That's really their limitation at the moment. When it comes to a challenge to Borac at the moment, there isn't really one. Zvinsky will do so, but you know, they're currently 10 points back. They've got a game in hand, so maybe if we call it a net 7. There are also some very obvious issues that I've pointed out on here before about how they've organised around Zrinski's European games, specifically that I think, you know, when some teams have played five games, Zrinski had only played one because they kept on cancelling things for European qualifiers. You know, that is nonsense. And while I appreciate it is very important for the coefficient, it's very important for getting some money into Bosnian football for them to be able to perform well in European football, it should not come at the it should not come at the detriment of the overall sporting integrity of the competition domestically at large, which is what it has done last season. It's what it has done this season as well. That, yeah, not I don't think that's a particularly good thing. Now, in terms of what Zrinski will have made, you're probably talking about them having made around 3.5 million, 3.7 million, something like that. It's around about 2.8 million for qualification to the group stage of the Conference League, and then there's the results based. I know for Olympia it's around about 4 million for they got two wins. So for Zrinski, I would guess it's about 3.7 for a win and a draw. And then you have the market amount, which is where you get sort of a bit of money for however much you're actually paying for the television rights there. And the point is that will be very low. You know, we're talking that's probably 100 grand max. I think there's also other things to say. You know, I think one of the things that people do have a natural inclination to think is that football in the Balkans is not necessarily a positive experience. For some of them it hasn't been, certainly for the grounds. I think if you look at the Villa fans from Zrinski, they were kept in a cage. Yeah, I don't think that isn't okay. But you know, they had generally a good time with the Zrinski fans. I did see some reports that said that some fans were attacked by Velez fans, which isn't obviously good. And that, you know, shouldn't be happening. I appreciate there's always going to be, as they say, hooliganism. There's always going to be a-holes, let's be honest. But, yeah. those issues carry on. There's no doubt about that, you know. Certainly the FA's Christmas party, in terms of the amounts of fines that they put out, is going to be a very good one this year, you know. Just from the last two rounds, there was over 50,000 krona, 50,000 marks even, taken in. You know, Sarajevo 8k for Pyro, from one game, an extra 3k for Pyro again. You know, most of it is Pyro fines, which, you know, again, obviously that's part of life there. It's not life, it's part of just, you know, the footballing culture there, and that's absolutely fine. I am a fan of it, but, you know, I appreciate that FAs aren't, and UEFA particularly aren't. If we go back, last weekend, Soroki Brieg against Zrinski, you know, Soroki Brieg came out and called out the refereeing commission for the refereeing in that particular match, because they didn't feel it was okay. They're not the only side to do that this season. You know, I've seen plenty of dodgy stuff. Let's be honest. They don't have VAR. But yeah. Anyway, the point is that, you know, all the old issues I think you had on that we talked about having the boycotts in the 2000s, you know, those issues still happen. The issues that have brought Bosnia really to its knees now, from a footballing perspective, are because of the changes that UEFA made in 2011-2012 with regard to the tripartite presidency. And it's a difficult one because it was a bit damned if you do, damned if you don't. Yes, there were problems there because there wasn't enough talent. You know, there wasn't enough administrative talent to run the FA, to run Bosnian football competently at all times. But while there is the talent, there is also the personal motivation for things to be changed around now, which is what we have under Vuka Zekovic. And, you know, why I hesitate to say that he doesn't want to see Bosnia be a successful football side. He does. He wants it to be very much on his terms. And that is not necessarily the terms that are positive for the rest of Bosnian football, I'm afraid. So I probably even leave it close to there, because I appreciate it's been a bit of an unfocused run through the issues that are going on in Bosnian football at the moment. You know, there is plenty of places to go to for additional reading. If you just go to a Bosnian news site, I generally go to Clicks, klix.ba, and their football section, you will be able to find plenty of stories about why things are a bit weird. Anyway, and I would always recommend just keeping in touch with local media sources anyway, because ultimately there's only so much I can read. I don't want people to have that high an expectation of me, God. The other thing I also mentioned is why it's sort of been unfocused is because normally when I come into a timeline episode, it is with about a 3,500 to 4,000 word long script that I'm reading off that I've researched and, you know, all that nonsense. Whereas with this, I've done it much more like an ad hoc episode, as in no script, which is probably saying, meaning that I've just said and other bridging sentences more often than I normally would. Apologies. I think the other big thing to point out, and this is why I really wanted to make sure we have this companion episode, is because, you know, it is really clear to see the outcome of the decisions that were made 10, 15, 20 years ago within Bosnia actually bearing fruit only now, when certain people are in place, you know, almost akin to, you know, the changes to the Yugoslav constitution from the Croatian Spring bearing fruit when Milosevic came into power. Well, this is the outcome of UEFA forcing there only to be one president, and we're seeing it, oh God, when Milosevic is in power, when Zeljkovic is in power. We won't accuse Savo of that much malfeasance, goodness no. There isn't any prospect of it imminently getting better, and I think that's really the big concern for anyone following Bosnian football. You know, you look at the talent or otherwise that's in the youth setup at the moment, and it ain't great. So when we talk about, you know, this being a nadir for the Bosnian side, you know, quite aside from anything, you know, we're talking about this being something that's probably going to last quite a bit. I think it's fair to say. You know, the real top players that they have still in the squad at the moment, you know, obviously we mentioned Pjanic at 33 earlier. We mentioned Dzeko as well, you know, 37 now. And he's still banging him in, don't get me wrong. He's still an absolutely excellent player, one of the best strikers in the world. Still. But, you know, he isn't going to be around for much longer. Jeez, oh. Rade Krunic, you know, again, he's now the wrong side of 30 as well. There's lots of problems there. I think it's fair to say, you know, the good players are going out rather than coming in. When you look at the results of the under-21 squad, you know, they were tied with Montenegro in the last round of qualifications. You look at the squad for the most recent games, and it's awfully short on players playing anywhere but Bosnia, really. You know, you're talking about the perhaps more prominent players, guys playing, in the Croatian leagues, really, such as Petar Sucic at Dinamo, who is pretty decent. Magic Sausage at Radomir, who I love, but let's not be honest, he's probably not going to be a world beater. Anas Kizalic, again, only 19, that's going back to looking at the under 21s. Alexander Karvic, who is at OFK now, on loan from Zvezda, but his development, I think it's fair to say, feels like it stalled a bit. He's not made the breakthrough at Zvezda that people expect him to. And, there's not really too much to be massively positive about there, I'm afraid. So that's really where we are at the moment with Bosnian football. And there is plenty that you can read about. I would say go look at that Yosemite article, go look at that World Soccer article. There's been a couple of other articles recently which escaped me at the moment. But, it's nothing like a side getting into the Conference League groups to bring a bit of attention in the way of Bosnian football. There is a real despondency around it at the moment, and I think really what I wanted to convey so much is as well as conveying the links from then to now and the causality / correlation from the decisions made to where we are now, is that no one really has any faith that things are going to get better. Vuka Zeljković isn't going anywhere. He isn't getting any more competent. I think, in fact, if you're sort of looking at the decision making around the national team over the past 12 months, you would probably say, if anything, he's sort of getting himself more entrenched. And I think if we see Borac win the league this season, which I do expect will happen, then that may also be another signal of that, because it's something I've expected for a while, and I'm not basing that expectation on purely footballing reasons, and that's a really sad thing to have to say. As you know, there are plenty of good Bosnian sources you can follow on social media, like Sasija Brulje, Alex Čizmić, and the BIH football account as well. It's not difficult to find good native language sources, the same for good news sources as well. I'm sure there's better than me. there's better than me, I just hope I'm somewhat more accessible and wordier than them. So I'm going to leave it there, because I appreciate that this companion episode has gone sort of to the length of the two actual timeline proper episodes. So it's a bit self-indulgent, Richard. So, as always, thank you very much for taking the time to listen. If this has been something you've enjoyed, please do sharing is caring on your social media stuff. People can follow me at HYFPRW. I'm that on the old Twitter /X. And on Blue Sky as well, which are the two main things that I use. If you want a Blue Sky invite code, hit me up. If you've also enjoyed it, then please do leave a review on your chosen podcast service, or click subscribe or follow or whatever it does to make sure that you are getting the latest content. Next stuff will be very much ad hoc episodes, just covering winter and where we are at the end of the autumn season, autumn stages of the seasons in leagues at the moment. Montenegro is finished, North Macedonia is finished, Slovenia is finished. The HNL is finished this weekend. It will be after I'm released, after this is released, with Dinamo Hajduk in the biggest game Croatian football has seen probably in maybe 20 years. Not given that a build up at all, am I? In terms of Bosnia, that finishes at the end of this weekend on Monday with Zrinjski against Sarajevo, which is, of course, 6 o'clock kickoff because F them fans, eh? And in terms of Serbia, that is finished an undetermined point. They said, sorry, this is just apropos of nothing. It was meant to finish on the 23rd, but then the FA came out and said, oh, well, no, actually, we're not going to finish on the 23rd. We're going to cancel that round of games and finish on the 20th. And the reason, this is genuinely the reason that they gave, was because we wanted to make sure that the Catholics could get home to celebrate Christmas on the 25th, which is some real 18th century thinking there. We're cancelling games because of the Catholics. Yeah, that seems a good reason, doesn't it? But when you look on the apps, it seems to suggest there are still games going to be played on the 23rd. So evidently, they're not that Catholic conscious in the Serbian FA, which I don't think is a surprise to anyone. But probably weather will do for some of those games, I am sure. If nothing else, we do have a Vatiti Derby coming up midweek on the 20th. That was the cancelled one from which was cancelled due to the issues in Kosovo earlier this autumn. Anyway, that is an extended outro that has gone on a bit longer than I wanted to, and certainly been far much more on a tangent than you would have expected. As always, thank you very much for taking the time to listen. This probably will be the last one of 2023. So, ho, 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 Merry Christmas. Whether it's the 25th of December you're celebrating or the 6th of January, I will catch you on the other side of those and have a great run into 2024. And I will catch you, as always, next time.